Let's do it. Let's do it. Take a mania for this week. The worst takes of the week try to take down the reigning defending champion. And Hayden Winks of Underdog, with a little bit of an assist from the broadcast schedule during training camp, preventing us from having at least a couple of take a manias, has managed to hold on to this thing since the middle of July, at least, I would say, probably early July. And he did it courtesy of this take on the DeAndre Hopkins trade.
You probably think that the Texans lost that David Johnson for DeAndre Hopkins trade, but guess what? You turned out to be wrong.
Wrong!
In addition to getting David Johnson, the Texans also received a 2020 second round pick and a 2021 fourth rounder. That second round pick, well, immediately wasted, nose tackle, nobody cares. But that 2021 fourth rounder turned out to be awesome down the line. The Texans called the Panthers the next draft, offered that fourth round pick and some other draft capital to move all the way up to 89th. Overall, they really had nobody at wide receiver, so they took developmental ex-wide receiver Nico Collins. Definitely took out some time, but Nico Collins is now a bona fide superstar and a 12th overall pick over on Underdog Fantasy.
How do you like them, Max?
More importantly, the Texans have CJ Stroud and Nico Collins under contract through at least the 2027 season. They've already won two playoff games together. In those games, Nico Collins, 96 yards in a tutty, 122 yards in a tutty. Not bad for just a throw-in.
Okay. Seth gets angrier and angrier every week that we play this thing.
You might have thought Lorena Bobbitt made a mistake in cutting off her husband's penis, but then what if I told you that later on? He's trying too hard. We've been over this over and over again. Horrible take.
Yeah. Well, that's the nature of the segment. He's the champ right now. All right. So we don't need to adjudicate that one again. All right, Seth. So let's see if any of these take down Hayden Winks.
Yeah.
This is Mike Tannenbaum. We played this one yesterday. This is Mike Tannenbaum giving his prediction. I feel like you're mad at me for playing that clip right now.
You know what bothers me? That Hayden Winks is a really bright guy. I'm more annoyed that I think somebody gave him that to read. I think somebody forced him into it.
Yep.
But he did it. He's an adult.
He did it. It wasn't me that made him read it, just to be clear. Yeah. Mike Tannenbaum on ESPN saying that he thinks the Titans are going to win the AFC South.
Really on a hot streak, you know, with some of your takes. And I'm told that you have another bold one.
Cam Ward, the first pick overall, Molly, is going to lead the Tennessee Titans to the AFC South Division Champion. And he
will lost your damn mind. This year?
Right now.
You're insane.
Are you kidding?
That's ridiculous.
Well, look at his track record. He started off at a Cardigan Word. He went to Washington
State. I'm not saying what he's not going to eventually do. You're saying year one.
Who's better in that division?
C.J. Stroud?
He's also going to be the best quarterback. I love C.J. Stroud, but when you have five new offensive linemen, Mr. Woody, you will attest to that. That doesn't happen overnight, and he was sacked 52 times a year ago.
You brought that up, Stephen A.
So Cam Ward is going to have great protection. They signed Dan Moore from Pittsburgh.
I got reservations about Houston's offensive line. I got reservations about everything in Tennessee.
They got two veteran receivers in Tyler Lockett and Calvin Ridley.
Oh, my Lord.
They got a good running back in Tony Pollard.
Cam Ward can play. I like him. But I'm just saying, yeah, what?
And they have a great offensive line. Look what a great offensive line has done for some of these young quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts, Jaden Daniels, amongst others. My point is, I think Tennessee, Cam Ward is the most unheralded first pick overall.
Because he doesn't talk. Not because we haven't seen him play. We've seen him perform collegiately. We know he was worthy of being the number one overall pick. He just doesn't say much. He's one of the quietest number one overall picks we've ever seen.
And most
we got
talented,
that part.
And talented.
He can ball. Anybody saying he can't ball?
So you want to take Daniel Jones over him?
Of course not.
Okay.
I said C.J. Stroud. That's what I said.
Yeah, I understand that. But look, when you look at Houston, it is a fatal flaw. When you can't protect a great quarterback, I'd rather take Cam Ward and that offensive line than C.J. Stroud and that offensive
line. Woody, you're awfully quiet.
Listen, it's not the worst take that I've heard from Mike T. I will tell you, it's not the worst.
Not the worst.
Pretty bad.
Yeah, that's not the worst take I've heard from Mike T.
From Mike Tannenbaum.
It's not the worst venereal disease I've gotten in my life, but it was still pretty bad. Yeah. This is the problem. If you pick the Titans because you like Cam Ward and because they bolstered their offensive line, fine. You can't start off by saying who else they got in that division. And now, to his credit, he had a response. which was, okay, but the offensive line, well, CJ's struggling behind this offensive line. The Titans' offensive line, as bad as the Texans' offensive line was last year, was arguably worse than the Texans' offensive line last year. And like they made some improvements, but your argument for the improvements in the Titans and while they'll win the division and why Cam Ward's going to be a better quarterback than CJ Stroud can't be that they have two generic veteran receivers. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Tyler Lockett, because he didn't choose to retire like he probably should have. Yeah. All right, fine. And then he called it a great offensive line. He didn't just call it an improved offensive line. He said that Titans offensive line is a great offensive line after being one of the worst offensive line of the last couple of years.
He also basically said you can't win the division if you can't protect your quarterback. And as a texter points out, but we did win the division.
The Texans won the division, exactly.
CJ.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? This one, the more times I hear it, it's the number of times he was wrong within it.
Yeah.
And, he's the new champion.
He's the new champ. Hayden Winks, you're going down. All right. Mike Tannenbaum. All right. Well, Tannenbaum's got a gauntlet he's still got to get through in this segment right here, Seth.
Right, yeah. He might not be. If you don't win it at the end of the day, then you don't get into the postseason tournament.
Okay, so there you go.
If you had brought up Van Jefferson as one of the veteran receivers, that would have been the
slam dunk. That would have been beautiful. All right, okay, so next one here. This is Isaiah Thomas on Draymond Green's podcast. So he's a guest on the podcast, Isaiah Thomas is, and he gives the opinion that Kevin Durant saved the Warriors dynasty because otherwise you, Draymond, and Steph and Klay would have been known as the team that blew the 3-1 lead to LeBron James. That's all you would have been known for is blowing a 3-1 lead.
Let me make mm-hmm. a bold statement here.
Yes, sir.
And I hope this don't upset you, but I'm giving y'all a compliment. Before Kevin Durant arrived in Golden State. Y'all were on the verge of and being remembered as the team that went 73-9 and lost to a Cleveland Cavalier team in the finals, 3-1. You up 3-1, and probably one of the biggest collapse in NBA finals history from a 73-9 historical team. Kevin Durant comes that summer and really saves y'all basketball legacy. And you win two championships after that. And now you're the Golden State Warriors dynasty that you're going to go into the Hall of Fame on and everything else. It is cemented because if Durant don't come that summer and you guys are remembered as the 73-9 team that lost 3-1 in the NBA Finals, all of your legacies are different.
He's assuming that they don't win another championship after
that. Yeah, I think that you're assuming that and that they would be remembered mostly by losing to the Cavaliers in that Finals. And that's how history would remember them, is that they blew that lead in the Finals and they wouldn't have remembered the champ. Now, like, it's clear, for one, it's easy to say your legacy would have been different, obviously, if you didn't win that championship or whatever. But that's different than acting like he was painting it almost like they'd be known as history's losers or history's bums for blowing that finals.
Well, he's saying that Kevin Durant was the only reason they won those next two,
Right. Yeah. And if he hadn't done that, they had no chance of winning anything.
And I would say he's ignoring the fact that they won another one without Kevin Durant. In 2022, Draymond, Klay, and Steph, they actually won another championship without Kevin Durant. I would also say, too, Seth, it felt like Golden State caught more heat for taking the easy way. And actually, like, their legacy in some ways gets damaged because they took the easy way of bringing in Durant as opposed to trying to tough it out with the guys they already had.
It's a bad take, but it just doesn't hit home the way Tannenbaum's does. I think, honestly, on the surface of it, it's actually a much worse take than Tannenbaum's take. Sorry, I was mixing up my bad former GMs. It doesn't move me emotionally.
Okay, that's important.
Yeah.
Okay. This next one is Chad Ochocinco and Shannon Sharp on their podcast, bewildered that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers cut Desmond Watson. Seth, I know you know who Desmond Watson is, the big 450-pound player out of Florida.
He's this year's version of every few years a 400-pounder comes along. And people, it's almost like the people who dream of a fat hockey goalie. Mm-hmm. They think like, hey, you got to get in the way of stuff and you're big.
Yeah.
He should be awesome.
Yes.
And it's frankly, it's an insult to defensive linemen.
It should offend
sometimes,
you.
Yeah, the overweight, the heavy run stuffing defensive linemen. I think sometimes people think like, oh, all you got to do is be big. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's a lot of social media clips of Desmond Watson having to walk or run laps because they were trying to get him in shape. You know, they're trying to get him.
And they basically gave him training camp off just to lose weight.
Just to lose weight. I mean, he's undrafted.
He didn't do it.
It's not like they drafted him in the second round or something. He was undrafted. He was a project. Ochocinco and Shannon Sharp are going in on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for their handling of Desmond Watson.
The Buccaneers waived Desmond Watson, the former Gator rookie listed at 449 pounds with the Bucs. Are the Bucs giving up with Big Des too soon, Ocho?
I would like for him to allow him to play and see how he plays at the size he's at now. He played at that size at Florida, so I understand what you guys are trying to do for safety reasons, but it's how he played at Florida. So why draft him if you're not going to allow him to play the game of football? Why not let him finish out his childhood dream? Why even put him through the ringer like that?
He's 6'5".
Yeah. Big boy.
He only going to get so small through diet and exercise. Mm-hmm. He's 6'5"? Yeah. You're not going to get him to 350. Because if you get him to 350, he can't play football. Because you taking all his strength away.
Hold on. If he's – how much Vita Vea weigh, huh?
Vita Vea probably 350.
So, he's 365. Desmond Watson, what, 365?
450.
Oh,
okay, so Chad Ochocinco didn't even know how much he weighed.
No, I give Ochocinco a pass a little bit just because I think he's this is one of those things where, which is cool on a podcast especially. He didn't know the whole story.
No,
you know, so he's kind of.
No, this feels like something some producer
at the end kind of been like, wait, 450. So
that's what he was at the end.
And yet,
oh, bleep.
For the purposes, I give Chad Ochocinco a pass in life. But as far as for the purposes of Takeomania, I think Ochocinco, if we had listened to the rest of that, it sounds like he was about to reverse his opinion on
maybe,
it.
Yeah.
But Shannon Sharp, who himself is what, 6'6"?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. What the hell is he talking about?
Can't get down to 350.
He's 6'5". You can't expect somebody who's 6'5" to get down to 350.
How tall?
The vast majority of guys who are 6'5" in the NFL weigh 330 pounds or less. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, dude. Did you watch the NBA? There's guys 6'5", 200.
It's like if he had said he's 7 foot, you can't expect him to get down below his body type. No, he's 6'5".
Right.
Yes, Shannon. There are a boatload of 6'5" defensive linemen who weigh well under 350.
Okay. So, does it win?
No. I have to add on to why it's going to win.
Okay.
Like Ochocinco doesn't get a pass for acting like he has a chance to live out his dreams. As opposed to every other damn guy out there who manages to stay at the weight that the people want him to be at.
And you know,
wait, what is this? A fan?
Not Make-A-Wish.
It's not. How could they deny man a chance to live out his dreams?
Desmond Watson.
Why could they not cut somebody else who was trying to live out his dreams to let this fatty live out his dreams?
The world's fattest Make-A-Wish kid. Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is the winner.
Okay, let's
He's
go.
He's 6'5", Sean.
Yeah, 6'5". How tall are you?
I'm 6'4".
6'4".
Why I can stay below 350 pounds.
Right. What were you at your heaviest?
If I were 6'5", it would be – my heaviest, I was 340 at my heaviest.
Okay, even like you're an inch.
Somehow I made it.
I can't believe it.
Down from 340. I know.
I can't believe it. All right. Here is here's Cam Newton on what Jalen Hurts – this is Cam Newton on ESPN yesterday, I believe – on what Jalen Hurts has to prove as an NFL quarterback.
Respectfully, I have to remind you that Nick Foles also won a Super Bowl.
Agreed.
So if you're asking me, with everybody paying attention, Jalen Hurts has so much to prove on this metrics because now I go from good to great to elite.
Okay. Right?
Now, his circumstances are what his circumstances are. Devontae Smith, you have A.J. Brown, you have Saquon, and the whole slew of talent. He cannot do anything about that, Stephen A.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, as he proves his whole situation for who he needs to be and who he has to become, is consistently winning and consistently doing what he is asked to do.
Okay, this take made no sense. And I know Cam has gone after Jalen Hurts, saying he's not a top 10 quarterback, this and that.
Yeah.
I don't understand what he was saying in the last 15 seconds there. What he has to do and he has to become is what he has to this, and he has to consistently win. He's consistently won.
Right. Yeah, that is the whole
– it's not a
one-off, one-year magical experience or what have you. He has consistently won. I guess I see where he's going with it. Is it like, okay, you have to – he's already done enough to prove that Nick Foles isn't a fair comparison.
Right.
I don't think. Because it's not just a one-off Super Bowl.
No.
I see where he's going with that, though.
Okay.
And what was the environment? Where were they?
They were at whatever school Michael Vick is coaching at. I think he's coaching at an HBCU. They were there doing First Take Live at that school.
They were doing that. Like. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
I always kind of give people the benefit of the doubt a little bit when it's a non-traditional environment.
Yeah.
Pep rallies especially.
Yeah.
It's really hard. If you're at a pep rally, it's going to be really hard to win Take-A-Mania because you're just, you know, sometimes you're saying crazy stuff just to get everybody going.
I got
to
send you the video. When he started in on Jalen Hurts, they flashed in on this one fan who had on an Eagles jersey.
Yeah.
And this guy was yelling from the crowd at Cam Newton, like Cam was talking about his kid or something, like about the Eagles fans' kid. I'll send you the video. It's a hilarious visual.
I wonder with Cam too, though. There's probably a little bit of, you know, sometimes you almost go over the top in trying to be objective in a lot of ways because Cam was, especially for back then, he was a different type of quarterback than people wanted to acknowledge was good. Cam almost feels like, oh yeah, people expect me to stick up for Jalen Hurts, et cetera, et cetera. Or he might see where he was better than Jalen Hurts in some regards, either as a passer or what have you. It feels like he's trying a little too hard to either be objective or whatever it might be.
All right.
Doesn't overtake the impossibility of weighing less than 350 pounds as a 6'5" person.
I tell you what, I didn't know that one. I'm like, I think this is a really bad take. I don't know if it can win. But in hashing this out with you, it is a very, very bad take by Shannon Sharp.
Ocho Cinco, even though Chad Johnson didn't, it was clear that he didn't really know the whole story, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guest on his podcast and everything all the time. I know he's regularly on there.
Right.
But it was when Chad Johnson acted like the Bucks owed it to this kid to let him live out his dreams.
Yes.
Despite him having failed to do what the Bucks asked him to do, which was lose weight, that they still need to let him live out his dreams. And then Shannon Sharp acting like the being 6'5", it makes it really, really hard to get down to 350.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, folks. Norfolk State is where Michael Vick is coaching right now. Thank you, texters. All right. So we've got. Did we play the kicking out? Did we play it, Ben? I'm sorry if we did. So there you go. Ocho and Shannon Sharp, they kick out. They are the new champions, the new reigning and defending Take-A-Mania champions. Can they get taken down next Friday? We shall see. There's a lot of stupid people in this world that say a lot of dumb things. We've got 7 days.
Just be sure, because Shannon Sharp wasn't a tall tight end. Yeah, he's only 6'2". That's why he doesn't understand.
Okay.
He realizes that if he had been 3 inches taller, he clearly would have been the league's first 390-pound tight end. Yes.
He feels taller than 6'2".
Luckily for a tight end, he was 6'2".
That's right.
He was saved from that fate. Unlike that fat bastard Gronkowski.
Oh, yeah. Hey, our first college football watch party is this Saturday at Boomer Jack's. Our Flight by Yingling college football watch party, 1110 Grand West Boulevard in Katy. Join us out there. The doors open at 10:30 a.m. They told me that when I was there last Friday. I said, what time the doors open for the UT and Ohio State game? They said, we're opening early, 10:30 a.m. for that game. So come get your seat. Have some ice cold Flight by Yingling. Eat some food. Root for your favorite team. They'll have all the games going there. They'll have some great prizes as well from Yingling to give away. We'll see you out there on Saturday.
Going to face Christian Walker here. And Walker sends one high and deep to left center field. All the way back and gone. Number 2. 21 on the year, breaks the tie in the bottom of the eighth. Christian Walker, his second home run of the day.
Shooter.
That is a called third strike. Ball game over. Astros take 2-3 from Colorado. And their lead in the AL West improves to 2 games as we head towards Labor Day weekend.
All right, there you go. The Astros 4-3 over the Colorado Rockies yesterday. And I think Seth and I are of like mind on this. Don't care that they needed a Christian Walker home run in the late innings and Brian Abreu to come in and close the door to beat a horrible team like the Colorado Rockies. We're taking wins where we can get them at this point.
They are, and you know,
those style points not necessary. Okay,
I'd be curious if our listeners feel this same way. I've gotten tired. I've gotten disgusted with myself in saying all season long, well, you know, they just got to get through this stretch with these injuries, and they got to wait until this guy comes back or that guy comes back. Almost to the point where I'm immune to even me saying that. So I got to remind myself that, all right, they didn't have Yordan yesterday, which we've grown accustomed to.
Yep.
They're trying to take it easy, take his time, coming back, all
yeah.
that.
Yeah. No, Seth, a day game after a night game. I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, I know.
That
I
hand,
know.
You know?
I know. Because the problem is, it's as far as we know, it doesn't sound like the hand is completely figured out or healed. So if they have to manage it, then so be it.
That's fair. Yeah.
But I am still in that same boat of, hey, Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
Who knows when Luis Garcia comes back? And that also Arrigetti looks like he might have figured some things out.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not completely ruling out Christian Javier, but there are a lot of things that realistically, even though we've gotten tired of saying it all season long, There are still like realistic improvements and sparks that can come over the remainder of the season and on into the playoffs.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now Christian Javier is going tonight against the Angels. The Angels come to town, and then it's Arrigetti on Saturday, and then Sunday is Hunter Brown against Jose Soriano. So they're going to get back to the top of the rotation here during this series. One of the news nuggets that came out yesterday is that Lance McCullers is not definitely getting his turn in the rotation this time around. He might be available Monday to pitch on Labor Day against the Angels, but he is going to be available in the coming out of the bullpen. And this will be the first time we've seen Lance do that since the playoffs, back when he was throwing 24 curveballs to the New York Yankees in 2017. Lance McCullers coming in out of the bullpen, if it happens this weekend, is going to be a very, very strange sight. Given how reluctant he's been reportedly to take on that type of a role.
Yeah, and even as recently as this year when he was coming back, he had a very thoughtful response about why he wasn't going to go to the bullpen and why he didn't consider it an option and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something, I mean, we people stopped even really asking him about it years ago. And it's been a topic, it's been a point of discussion for a long time now. I think that it seemed like Espada was being very careful to point out that this was temporary.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe it's something that if he does really well with it and he can go out there and just throw his best stuff and not have to worry about it. Because my first knee-jerk reaction is, man, I know I like the idea of him as a reliever, but more times than not as a starter, it's the first inning that's the biggest issue.
Yes.
It's him, and then working back from that first, even when he's at his best, sometimes he scares you a little bit in the first inning. But perhaps when he knows that he can just go out there and throw his best stuff right off the bat.
Yeah, maybe.
And that he's going to have a limited pitch count, it might be different.
Maybe. I've thought since his first elbow surgery back in 2018? So he missed 2019. He came back in the COVID year. I thought back then, like, hey, maybe a move to the bullpen. We saw John Smoltz do it at one point in his career, was really successful. I think the things that Lance has going for him that I think still apply, even though maybe the arm talent isn't what it was back then, is that I do think he's got the right mentality to be a closer or a late inning reliever. Like, I think he's got the competitiveness to do it. I think he's got that bulldog type mentality. I just think the problem is now two things. You pointed out one of them, Seth. Yeah, he gets off to bad starts in games. And when you're coming in for one or two innings and those are your only two innings, that's a big problem. I think the other thing that concerns me too, and I think this was his reason for not wanting to do it more recently, is he's a creature of habit. He likes routines. Yeah. And it's to the extent that I think it almost feels like Lance feels like if he gets out of a routine, that's going to affect his health in some way.
Right.
And even if it doesn't, just that psychologically he feels that way would probably have an impact on the way he goes out there.
So it's a different challenge, but then also it can work out that way sometimes where, hey, a challenge like that ends up getting the best out of you.
Yeah. Well, he's got to embrace it. He doesn't have a choice. He's not good at starting right now, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That tends to be an issue,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
I guess the other part, too, I mean, yeah, he doesn't profile. I mean, he certainly doesn't profile anymore like some kind of a closer
no,
or something.
No.
But when your movement stuff is your calling card, or at least used to be your calling card, yeah, you don't have time as a reliever to find your location and to work through some of that stuff. It's not the same as just coming out and just throwing 99 mile per hour fastballs.
Yep.
I don't know. Like, look, you got to like look at what's right in front of you, and just to use the old cliche, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Worrying about what he used to be or what he could have done back in the day, like those days are long
yes,
gone.
Yeah.
What can he offer you right now?
Yep.
And as a reliever, it's worth the experiment at least to see if maybe that is something that is a shot in the arm or a kick in the butt that works for him, because what he's giving you as a starter isn't it's not going to be much worse than what he gives you as a starter right
yeah
before.
yeah I'm just interested to see if he truly is available in the bullpen. Like, what type of situations do they see bringing him in on, you know? Do they I don't think you can bring him in leverage situations because he's just too wild to have in there with guys on base. And that's a different mindset too. Like, there's relievers and then there's guys that come into situations where there's, you know, ducks on the pond out there. I would guess it would be him coming in to start an inning. And if so, is he a guy that they view as somebody who is pitching at a level right now where you can bring him in? You know, let's say, on Sunday, Arrigetti goes five innings and the score is 2-0 Astros. Do they feel comfortable bringing Lance McCullers in to pitch a couple of innings to get to the back end of the bullpen, you know? Or yeah. is he with his 7 ERA right now just a guy that if they get down 7-1, he's in there just to eat up innings and finish the game? Like, I could see every scenario other than him coming in leverage in the 8th or 9th inning. I could see every scenario right now where he's viewed as, look, he's just not very good. So if we get into a blowout type of game, he's going to come in, and either way, he's going to come in and eat up some innings. Or I could see him coming in at the beginning of an inning, you know, there maybe if it's a close game, like the 6th inning or something like that.
The most shocking stat of some of the advanced stats with Lance and how he's been so far this year compared to his historical numbers, his hard hit percentage is 50.7%, whereas back in his earlier days, it was like 32%, 30%. Yeah. 35%, 32%, 50.7%.
You don't even need to contextualize that stat by saying, here's what the average is. Imagine somebody and half the hitters that are coming up against them are making hard contact.
Yeah.
Half the time. 50.7. Holy crap. That's wild. All right. Final segment coming up. We did not get to one person's take on the Micah Parsons situation in Take a Mania, but it is Take a Mania worthy. This was the take from Michael Irvin. We'll do this in the next segment. Michael Irvin's take on whether Micah was going anywhere. This is from last week. We'll get to that coming up in the final segment. We'll find out what the guys on In the Loop have going on their show today as well. Stay there. You are listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
About, I'm sorry, I didn't get to.
Okay. That was Jerry Jones. I don't know what.
That was Stephen Jones, his son, correcting him,
yeah.
Saying Michael instead of Micah, yeah.
I don't know how many times that was that Jerry had said Michael in the press conference before Stephen felt like he needed to step in. But in that moment right there, that was the most of the time I see Stephen Jones, Jerry's son, sitting next to him. And it feels like Stephen Jones is kind of in lockstep with him. Even though Jerry does some weird things and doesn't handle business in an orthodox way oftentimes, I feel like the two are in tandem. That was a moment yesterday where I felt like Stephen Jones is like, if this old man says Michael one more time, I feel like that might be fraying a little bit. You know,
yeah, like what's going through his mind where he knows that his dad's going to stray off into diciness, I guess, at times. But like, yeah, what's the moment where you feel like you got to get him back on the tracks? That's a hard. Stephen Jones doesn't get enough credit.
Or take the keys away from him, you know?
Honestly, Stephen Jones might be that rare instance where I'm like, listen, yeah, I obviously nepotism played a part here, but he's earned it. It's just, man, I'll tell you what, through various different paths to success, I might stray away from nepotism in that regard. Yeah. Who knows? Stephen Jones could have been managing a hedge fund or something at this point, away from the public eye, and just not had to deal with, just make his own decisions in life.
Wow. I think Stephen Jones probably sees that report like $12.8 billion were worth, eh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good job, Pops. Here was Michael Irvin, who had Jerry Jones on his YouTube channel last week. This is Michael Irvin. This didn't make it into Take a Mania because we ran out of time, but Michael Irvin, I got to go find Michael Irvin's podcast today after this trade, because here's what he had to say last week about the chances of Micah Parsons no longer being a Cowboy.
Micah Parsons, hey, look, you can report all you want. There's no way they're allowing Micah Parsons to go anywhere. All of this is part of the negotiations. And as I talked to Jerry the other day on my podcast, and he was talking about it the other day when he tried to make that offer, he said somebody told him to shove it up his rear and all of that. Honestly, it blew my mind. It blew my mind that any kind of conversation like that would be going on in a situation like this. Michael Parsons, I want him to take control of this thing and say, I don't care about you two and whatever y'all got going. Get y'all butts in a room and get my money on that paper. That's what you need to be doing. So I'm hoping that's what gets done. But I guarantee Michael Parsons is not going anywhere. Jerry's not that crazy. This is all what we call just negotiation stuff.
Wah, 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 boom, wah.
Jerry is that crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's by that logic, only somebody who is that crazy would trade away Michael Parsons. And yet there he did. And again, I know what people are saying, and we've had it all morning long. There's reasons where it makes sense to trade away Micah Parsons and everything. But Jerry Jones, by making a spectacle of it, did it in the exact worst fashion possible, including the fact that now when he's trying to present it like, oh yeah, this has been part of the potential plan all along. No, if it was part of the potential plan, you would have done it before the draft. Because right now, all you've done is punted on the season.
Yeah.
You get nothing from those draft picks that helps you right now unless you trade one of them for a player at some point this year. You traded away one of your best players for future draft picks, and you helped the team that's put you out of the playoffs consistently in the last few years. Yep. You've helped that team potentially drive the value of those draft picks down. That's normal in any situation. It's just that it's, again, if you trade him to a bad team or what have you, those draft picks are worth more.
If Texan fans are like, what trade do you think this is most like that the Texans have made? I would say take your pick, because it's got the holy crap, that's what we got for this guy, for our all-pro player elements of the DeAndre Hopkins trade. And it's got the timing, which, as you just pointed out, Seth, is just abysmal if you're the team that's getting the draft capital of the Jadeveon Clowney trade.
It's the Jadeveon Clowney trade where, all right, you guys didn't handle this seemingly well at any point, and then finally you're just desperate to be done with it, so you make the trade. And you missed out on a chance to help your team in this coming season.
Right. So, that's right.
For one, I don't know. What did this do? You talked about how much it improved the Packers' odds. What did it do to the Cowboys' odds?
The Packers went, the Packers, I'll do them both. The Packers went from 22-1 to win the Super Bowl down to 12-1. The Cowboys are still in the same tier that they were in before. They were 47-1 to win the Super Bowl. They're 55-1 now. So,
This is what's starting to annoy me, and where there's a local spin to this is Michael Irvin was given kind of one of those all is well takes, and oh no, this is all just media stuff or Jerry making a big deal out of it. Oh, all is well, and it's going to happen, and everybody knows that. It started to annoy me with the Joe Mixon stuff, just because it's just so easy at any given point. Whenever I get nervous about somebody's injury or upset about somebody, even like going back to CJ Stroud during OTAs, it's the easiest thing in the world to say like, you guys are reacting about nothing. You're stupid.
Yeah.
You're just being hyper reactionary. Like those people were saying that about Joe Mixon during OTAs. Then they were saying about it during training camp.
Yep.
And then, okay, wait a second. In training camp, you're saying, hey, all is well. Quit freaking out about Joe Mixon. Of course he's going to be fine. Now you find out that he's going to miss four games. And the same damn people are saying, like, I don't know why people are freaking out.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be, you're lying. You were already wrong.
Yep.
He's missing the first four games of the season. It's clearly something serious.
Something
we
is wrong.
We just have no idea what it'll be. So I reserve the full right to say, I don't know if he's going to play at all this season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you seriously sit here After, if on August 1st you were saying you're overreacting about Joe Mixon, you're just quit being a baby about this. And now when we know for sure he's going to miss at least four games, you're saying the exact same thing?
Yeah, it does. It's illogical. It's illogical. Yeah.
And Michael Irvin are really cheesing me out. Yeah.
You know who you are. You're chapping my ass. That's right. I'm looking at the call screen here, and it says Larry and Stafford, death of the Cowboys. Okay, I'm intrigued. Larry, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Sean, Seth? Hey, man, it's a beautiful time to be alive, man. It's the last weekend without professional football. This time next week, I'll be probably going to the liquor store, buying up as much alcohol for my boys to get ready to play the Rams. The Cowboys are in full-fledged meltdown mode, and it's just a fun time. And I'm going to get to it. Let me hit on Lance real quick. Lance McCullers has been spayed and neutered, man, like Bob Barker used to say. I don't want to see Lance McCullers near anybody that had, if we're up 2-1 or 1-0 or nothing, because Lance McCullers has decided that he doesn't want to be a dog anymore because he's throwing all breaking pitches and he's missing the zone, and you can't trust him. And without him being able to throw a fastball across the plate without feeling nervous about it, no, you just send him in there when the game is way out of hand until he gets his nuts back, because right now he is not confident at all. Now, let's move on to them Cowgirls. Yeah, Cowboy fan, y'all remember when y'all was running around here laughing at me about Jack Easterby, the pastor, going over there and he's trading DeAndre Hopkins and all this, and I had to go to barbershops every day or every weekend, and y'all was pouring me an extra drink talking about you look sad and all this other stuff? Yeah, I don't forget nothing, fellas. I have a long memory. And see, here's the thing about it. Now you Cowboy fans have to sit there and watch your owner, who is probably eating all soft food and drooling his oatmeal now because he has no idea what universe he's in, because he lives in the 90s as if we are still living in the 1990s right now. Y'all ass is in trouble, and I'm going to drive my ass probably to Lake Charles this weekend and put a lot of money on y'all ass not winning more than 5 or 6 games, because y'all do not have anybody in that locker room that can do what Andre Johnson did when he told Cal McNair and everybody over there on Kirby he didn't want to have nothing to do with that franchise because something is toxic about Jack Easterby. Y'all don't have them kind of dudes in your locker room. Y'all got Dak Prescott and some no-name groups over there trying to keep y'all alive. But for me personally, it's a beautiful day because now I'm going to come see y'all ass in the barbershop and get a fade and laugh at y'all ass. Fellas, they might as well get ready, because as long as the Cowboys are in destruction mode, I love every minute of it. Go ahead and put Jerry back on that show with Billy Bob Thornton and whatever, and let him go ahead and spoon some food, and I'll holler.
Hi, Larry. Appreciate that. Landman is the name of that show. Jerry was good on Landman. Horrible GM right now, but he's good on Landman. Couple things, Seth, on that. First of all, the reason Lance McCullers is throwing all breaking balls is because his max velo is like 92.5 right now. He's getting by with what he's got. Whatever's in the backpack, he's pouring it out and going, all right, this is the stuff that's got to get us back to earth. He's MacGyvering. Okay, I do like that Larry is as petty as I am towards Dallas people that would bring up, back in the day, bring up Jack Easterby. You and I talked about this during a break, and I really like our hosts up at our sister station, 105.3 The Fan. We see them every year at the Super Bowl. They're really good guys. I remember one time, though, the one time you and I did a crosstalk with Dallas, with our station, or with their station, was
with Sean and RJ, I believe.
With Sean and RJ, because that's the morning show up there. That's the show that always has Jerry Jones on. That's relevant to what I'm about to say. So that was during the period where Gavin Spittle was sort of the interim PD here. So he's the PD up there and in between program directors here before Parker got hired. Gavin loved doing crosstalk with across stations. He really liked that.
He liked a little bit of smack talk. Yeah.
Well, he's like, you guys should go on with, you should do a crosstalk with Sean and RJ at a time where the Texans had just gone 4-13 with David Culley. And they're in the middle of racking up 12 win seasons with Dak Prescott, a quarterback, and whatnot.
Yeah.
So we were doing a crosstalk with them. And at one point I said, yeah, you know, Seth and I talked to Davis Mills, who was the starting quarterback at the time. We talked to him yesterday or something like that. And they just sneered at us as if, like,
they said, how'd you get that?
Tough
how'd
get.
You get that?
Yeah.
Tough get. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, this is how you make
it. I thought it was pretty funny.
It was funny, yeah. But it made me feel a little puny, you know, in the radio world. Like, sorry, we don't get Jerry Jones on our show, you know?
Yeah.
So now, when the turntables, the Texans appear to be the well-run, well-oiled machine. And granted, has not gotten to a conference title game yet, but we're not sitting here trading away our best player for a couple of first-round picks in future drafts and Kenny Clark.
Yeah. Well, and the Cowboys haven't made it to a conference championship game either in the modern NFL.
Right.
Ever since the passing era of the NFL began, since the forward pass was invented,
practically.
Basically.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what's fun, kind of, is to watch as Cowboys fans, because you guys know at your workplace, you know, you've got a few of those Cowboys fans that would not shut up for years and years and years about, like, well, we won this and that, like stuff that happened increasingly in the rearview mirror, and now it's gotten to the point where you're 30 years since they've done anything notable in the playoffs at all.
Yeah.
And the Texans have outperformed them this century in the playoffs. Like, it's just
by a mile.
The fans themselves, the Cowboys fans themselves, over the last couple of years have started to realize it.
Yep.
And they're like, holy crap, we did get old.
Yeah.
Didn't we? Like, yep. I was like, they were like the woman at Walmart with her muffin top hanging out who thinks she's the, you know, she's got it all going on.
Yeah.
You know, and she's a little delusional. And that's what the Cowboys fans were.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not even a pretty face to go with the muffin tops, you know? It's just not, you know, not even any.
They'd be lucky to be allowed into Walmart.
Thank you, yes.
You know?
All right, is this a Cowboy fan texting the show, Seth? The Cowboys punted on a season that they didn't have a chance at anyway. Before this trade, they were the third best team in the division. After this trade, they're the third best team in the division. Is that a Cowboy fan, do you think? Rationalizing things?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, like, well, we weren't going to win anyway. That's how far have we fallen? They're like, oh, no, listen, we're playing four-dimensional chess here. We were going to suck anyway. So it's actually a tank. Nobody wants to talk about that.
The issue, good
for you. Yeah, I know Jerry Jones is the one to win at that game.
The issue is that if you watched Jerry Jones's press conference yesterday, somewhere amidst the 11-minute verbal diarrhea that he was spewing in one answer, 11 minutes he went for in response to a question. It's one thing to do an opening statement, you go 10 or 11 minutes. That's long. But in response to a question, the only other time that happens is when we have Rusty Harden on the show. Rusty will go for a good 6 or 7 minutes, as we've learned. But the thing with this that, oh, they were third place in the division, they're going to be third place anyways. Jerry is selling this at the press conference yesterday as if Kenny Clark is going to be a difference maker for this team.
Yeah.
You know, like, he is not – his rhetoric yesterday was not one where he's saying, well, it's a rebuilding year for the Cowboys. He's not doing that at all.
If you're going to punt on the season, if that's Jerry's masterful plan, then you make this trade before the draft.
Right.
To where you can help out in future years. It's just and perhaps trade to somebody, find a better trade with somebody who's not the team that perennially or at least semi-perennially shuts you down in the playoffs.
That's the part that might be the biggest disconnect between here and Dallas when looking at this trade is – that Green Bay part of it, where Green Bay has been their arch nemesis, like that, I don't feel that because I'm not a Cowboys fan. But I like that was a big part of what they were talking about yesterday up there about this. But yeah, like trading them to the Ravens or the Chiefs for the Texans right now.
Trying to give Jerry Jones any kind of credit for long term strategic thinking. Yeah. It's like trying to say that Forrest Gump is going to craft your foreign policy plan for the future. If it does work out, it's going to be by dumb luck and nothing more.
Yeah, he always conducted himself pretty well when he was around heads of state. I will say that, Forrest Gump.
No, he did. He did a really good job in moments. He surpassed expectations.
Yeah, he did tell the president he had to pee.
I still question his long term economic planning ability.
That's fair. That's fair. That's John Lopez. That's Reggie Atatula. Hi, guys.
Howdy.
I've got about 29 dad jokes I could make about those clowns in Congress anyway right now.
Hey, Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. How you fellas doing?
Terrific. Who would win a mile race between Kenny Clark and Seth Payne?
I don't know. What are Kenny Clark's dimensions right now?
I don't know what they are.
Yeah.
I think I don't know. I think I'm carrying on any kind of more smack talk about the mile run is going to be private. I think I'm the only person at the station that actually cares about this. So I'm using it. I've let it occupy. I've got a text conversation going with Judy Pendergast about my training plan. I'm going running shoe shopping this afternoon.
We need to do this.
I've got the next 3 weeks planned out for my workouts. I've had it. Now this is the fun part though. I've started to eat more like a distance runner because I'm doing the equivalent of 50. I'm doing it a lot on machines, but in terms of cardio, I'm doing the equivalent of 50 to 70 miles of running per week.
If you really want to do it, 50 to 75.
I tell you what, after being pretty moderately low carb for many years, whew, I'm having a blast.
How's it feeling?
Trying to figure out ways to eat more carbs. Oh my gosh, this is fun.
I'm having a blast. If you really are serious about this, I have secured Rice University's track privately for us.
For us, okay. Yes. Hopefully, when it's a little cooler outside.
Yeah, we'll do it down the road. But okay, good. I have confirmation as of about 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
All they need is lots and lots of waivers.
Oh we can make that happen.
Oh no, yeah, listen, no, as the only person who genuinely cares about this, because Clint Stoerner insulted me and now I've got a chip on my shoulder about it, it can be no sooner than 3 months from now.
I totally agree. I like that. Get in shape, a little cooler outside. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Does this mean you're going to participate, John Lopez?
We'll see. I think so. If you participate, I'll participate.
Okay, I'm going to participate.
Yeah.
I think Rice by Forbes was just named. Were they in the top 10 of universities?
Privates.
Oh, okay, among privates.
Private universities?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Rice. Privates. Yeah, you know this, Reginald. Rice is it's the Rice of the South.
That's right. Yes.
I don't like it when people say the Harvard of the South or something.
Yeah.
Especially these days.
Mm-hmm. Politics.
About stuff, so,
hey,
yeah.
Be careful. That's where your running coach went to school.
Right? Rice Stadium hosted, was it Super Bowl III?
Three or four, something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in the single digits.
Yeah.
That's always like my favorite thing
Vikings
to think about.
Vikings and Dolphins?
That sounds right.
You're the one that was there.
I think it was a Vikings joint.
Although that does tie into the... Go ahead, Seth. Yeah.
Oh, no, go ahead. No,
I was going to say that does kind of tie into the question of the day.
Okay.
Yeah. Real quick, so I can sum this up. Private and public universities, Rice was ranked 12th best in the nation.
Nice.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
And
go
just
Rice.
As we're cleaning things up, Kenny Clark, 6'3", 314.
Oh, Seth's beating his
506.40.
Yeah, no, the body weight matters so much.
Yeah. That's no disrespect to Kenny Clark. He's just heavy.
Yeah, you know how Clint was saying he was hoping to run an 8-minute mile? The last 5K I ran at the weight of 290, I ran a 24-minute 5K.
That's a sub 8-minute mile. Yeah, that's 5K is 3.1 miles.
As Clint continues to be so confident that he's going to trounce me.
Clint's even backed off of that from when I've been listening. Well, he was off yesterday, but 2 days ago, he's like, after you were going all in on doing a 7-minute mile and started renting space in his head, he was like, well, I didn't really mean like 8 minutes. I meant like 8-something. You know, like I meant like 8 will be the first
8:59.
Yeah, exactly.
And Seth, if I could put a battery in your back on maybe even just winning this thing or finishing higher than I think you had previously thought. I played pickup basketball yesterday for the first time in a couple of months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The entirety of the 90 minutes that I played, my legs did not loosen up once. I don't think I've ever had this happen before where my legs remain tight. So if we actually got there on the track, as of right now, not confident in how I
run. That'll teach you.
Let's see what happens.
Talking about Super Bowl 4.
I'm going to get this out of the way right now because we're at 10:02 and we haven't done the question of the day yet. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM, HD2 Houston, an Odyssey sports station, and Crosstalk is brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing right now. What is the question of the day?
What is something that octogenarians should not be allowed to do, or something funny you've seen an octogenarian do, as in Jerry Jones?
Have kids.
Oh, wow. No,
to be clear, I want to, because you put two things out there. Yeah. I've not watched octogenarians have kids.
Why not?
I think it's something that's, I'm not into that niche.
Oh, okay.
I have different categories. Yeah.
Was it Al Pacino?
Name any of these aging mobster actors. De Niro's.
Yeah, I was like,
kids?
De Niro's really good about
Pacino?
This.
Pacino? Yeah, like, dude, I 80 years old having kids?
Yeah.
He's octogenarian,
I don't care about taking kids to school. Somebody will handle that when I'm gone.
Dude.
Yeah.
The funniest thing is that one of my favorite things on social media is when you get a grandma either just taking a monster rip off a bong.
Oh, yeah.
Or just a tirade of profanity.
Yes.
Just doing something that doesn't seem like what you expect out of an 80-plus-year-old woman. I love those.
My favorite is a personal one, like a lot of our texters are going to come in, I'm sure. My mother, who, by the way, would have turned 95 this week, she got in her late 80s. She started text. She was texting.
Okay.
And at the end of every text, te amo, mama.
That's adorable.
Every text.
Answering, like putting your name and like, love you.
Yeah.
Mom. Yeah. A signature at the end of her text.
Oh, I told her 100 times, like, mom, your name is on the text.
Yeah.
It don't matter. Yeah. She's like, you're right. It is, because I'm putting it there. Oh, it was Arch Manning.
Yeah.
Arch Manning said, or it might have been Eli talking about it, but they were talking about Archie Manning signs all of his texts.
He does too.
All of them. Yeah. He signs them.
Te amo, mama.
Yeah. Yeah. Puts his initials or whatever at the bottom. That's beautiful. That is beautiful.
Yeah.
And a nice little anti-fraud measure. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good. Yeah.
Just in case, lest you believe someone else has gotten a hold of my phone and is sending you messages.
It is me.
It is me. All right, fellas, have a great show.
Thanks, man.
All right.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Yeah, have a great weekend. Yeah. Enjoy the college football this weekend.
Ooh, I already enjoyed it already yesterday.
A lot of fun. That was a good day. Go Cougs, man. 1-0.
All around good day.
And it looks, I don't know if deluding myself is the word that I would use here, but I'm already hyping myself up in a way that I know I'm going to be disappointed at some point this season. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, oh, this Cougars team.
Oh, the Cougs. Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, shut up.
It's time.
Yeah. Willie Fritz, baby.
Time to win the Big 12.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Can I say the Texans player that you just learned lives in your building? Do you think I could say who that is? Or he probably doesn't want it out.
Oh, I have no idea. I used to talk about Charlie Heck living in my building.
Mm-hmm.
I came up with a skit for a Texans player who's known for picking up fumbles and running them into the end zone, who lives in Sean's building. I'm like, you need to do a video of you dropping stuff in the hallway.
Oh, wow.
Running behind you, picking up and running it into your apartment for you.
And then Barrick Darnett can pick them up and...
Scoop Who is
up.
That?
Yeah. That's
you
funny.
You could call it Derek and the Dominoes.
That would be. I laughed when Seth sent that to me. I'm like, that would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right. We are done. We are out of time. I disclaimered already.
You
so
did.
Let's do this thing, fellas. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Yeah, antibodies, and we got to go.